I presume that everyone would like to start out lecture today with a review of the topics coming up for the exam?
Yes.
Okay. I will not be asking about the difference between oxidation state and formal charge again, because there aren't that many different ways I can ask that question, and I don't, in a sense, care that we're able to do formal charge at the moment, because everything we're doing is related to oxidation state. So you still do need to be able to calculate oxidation state or oxidation states in redox reactions. That does not directly mean that you need to memorize any sort of rules, although if it helps you to memorize the rules that are earlier in the textbook, the ones you covered in Chem 1A, that's fine too. There are only four rules really that we went over. One is that hydrogen is normally plus one because it's normally less electronegative than other elements. Although if it's combined with a metal, then you have a metal hydride, and that can be negative one. Another rule that gives you another oxidation state for hydrogen would be that all elements in their unreacted states also have oxidation state of zero. So that would apply for oxygen as well. We have a rule for oxygen where it's negative two generally because it's usually the most electronegative element in a compound. Although if it's connected to itself in the form of a peroxide, then it's negative one. We never discussed the rule formally, but yes, if you have fluorine attached, that would also change oxygen's oxidation state. And as I mentioned just a moment ago, if you have elemental oxygen, then that's oxidation state of zero. The only other rule, two other rules that we talked about are that if you have an ion, a monatomic ion, that therefore has no bonds, the oxidation state is the same thing as the formal charge. And then the last one we talked about was that the sum of the oxidation states must equal the sum of the formal charges, which must equal the overall charge on the molecule. So this discussion we had in lab lecture one day, you're not going to have to necessarily break up a molecule by drawing in where bonds break. I know that's what we had done in lab, but you don't have to be able to show me the work because mostly it's going to be like the examples we've had on our quiz or in here in lecture, where we've got simple inorganic compounds. It's really when carbon is in the picture that things can get tougher because carbon can have any oxidation state from negative four to positive four. But for most of the metals, we have oxygen or hydrogen, simpler elements to guess their oxidation states for. So that's going to be the type of problem that you're going to have to do over again. Of course, the whole point of this is to be able to find out what is going on in a redox reaction. So you do need to be able to identify the oxidizing and reducing agents. And then the oxidizers and reducers. In a moment, as we get more specifically to electrochemical cells, we'll figure out how to tell which is going to be the oxidizing agent and reducing agent on the basis of voltage. But what this means is just looking at oxidation states. Could you identify these things? This is the lead into the chapter, because with the chapter, we start out with balancing redox reactions. And we did examples where we did balancing in acidic versus basic conditions. So you still would need to be able to do it in acid or do it in base. Recall, though, that the base method, you start out doing the acid method first. But then at the very end, after you've balanced everything, then for each H plus that you have present, you add an OH minus to both sides of the equation, as that then removes the acid from the solution, ends up giving you basic conditions instead. As I'm going through these topics, if anyone has any questions about any of the individual topics, stop me, because that's the point of what we're doing right now, is the review. There is, as I indicated, going to be a little bit of new material today. But one thing to put your mind at ease, I'm not going to have you memorize the different examples of batteries that are in here. So that might be it's interesting to look at the difference between a primary battery, a secondary battery, a fuel cell, to look and see what the nickel metal hydride batteries are like. But I'm not going to quiz you on those things. Any questions so far on these topics? Yes. So the cases where oxygen does not end up -2, if it's connected with itself or anything that's more electronegative. Well, there's only one thing that's more electronegative, which is fluorine. So if it's connected with itself, the reason the oxidation state changes is because oxidation state is defined assuming that you're going to have a bond that's unevenly distributed, that you'll have one element that's more electronegative than the other, and it wins the electrons in that bond. But then what do you do if you have oxygen and oxygen connected to each other that have the same electronegativity? Well, then you go back to treating it like a covalent bond where it would break evenly, one electron going each direction. So oxygen normally ends up -2 because if it has as many bonds as it can have, and if it gets all those electrons from those bonds, the maximum that it's always going to have is 8 electrons. 8 because it's on the second row of the periodic table, and then 6 is the normal valence electrons it would have, so 6 minus 8 gives you the -2. It'll always end up like that, except for the couple exceptions, because it always wins the electrons from any bonds it has. So the exceptions are when it's connected to itself, two oxygens, in which case you'll end up with a -1 oxidation state instead, because each oxygen only gets one less electron because it doesn't win both the electrons from the bond.
How does oxygen state for oxygen
to go to gas zero? In a peroxide. Oh. If you have an oxygen-oxygen single bond, and so if you have a peroxide, that's when it's -1. Or if you have it connected up to fluorine, because fluorine will win the electrons away from oxygen instead. So if you have HOF, for example, oxygen only ends up with 6 electrons, so it's got an oxidation state of 0 because of fluorine. And then just like Jeremy said, if you have elemental oxygen, all elements have oxidation state 0.
So O2 is
0. Okay. O2 is 0. H2, all the F2, Cl2, Br2, I2, N2, any of the diatomics.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Other questions about these topics? Yes. Yes, I am. Yes.
Are you going to give us a problem like the last sample?
You mean practice problem? There's already a ton of practice problems in the book like this, though. Really, I mean, I'm not going to ask anything more complicated than what we already seen in lecture. In fact, it'd probably be less complicated than the example that we did for the quiz, because borate is kind of a tricky one. So it's probably going to be simpler than the quiz, even. Okay, so from here we went to electrochemical cells. I don't know that I'm going to ask another question about the design, meaning the construction of one. What does one look like? Although, in theory, it's possible. What I do want you to be able to do is determine the direction of electron flow, which that's going to be to use the charts or whatever information I give to you on the exam. Like, I don't know if I'm going to give you a whole chart of all the reduction potentials, or if I'll just give you selected ones. But given the appropriate information, you should be able to figure out which way the electron flow is going to be. And then you need to be able to determine the cell voltage, which there's one complication to that we've discussed, which is the Nernst equation. Meaning if we do the reaction at non-standard conditions, which, as a separate topic then, you need to know what the standard state is. Now I want to come back to that question of cell voltage to do another quick practice problem and to show you one very important detail that I've skimmed over so far. So let me pull up my miniature table of reduction potentials here. Is that large enough that you all can read it?
Yes.
Or if I do that, that help? So let me ask you, based on this chart, if you're in aqueous conditions and you've got standard state, which, remind me one last time, what are the conditions of the standard state?
One molar,
which is what really matters for this discussion. One molar ion concentration, but what else?
One
bar of pressure and 25 degrees Celsius. Okay, good. So if we're under the standard state, then what is a better oxidizing agent? Silver plus or copper 2 plus? So a couple of people got appropriately confused. Let me ask the question again. Which is the better oxidizing agent, silver plus or copper 2 plus? And then now, the people who are confused, why are you confused? Because did you think that meant that silver and copper was losing electrons? If copper and silver are the oxidizing agents, what are happening to them? They're getting reduced. So in case a couple of you look confused, you might have said, well, wait, but silver can't be oxidized. But I asked which is the better oxidizing agent. So what I really asked just then is which is the better reduce, or which compound more prefers to get reduced, which ion, the silver plus or the copper 2 plus? Well, how do I use this table to tell me? Remember that positive voltages indicate a thermodynamically favorable process. So what that means is for silver and copper both, it is favorable for them to be reduced. But which one is more favorable to be reduced? Which one has the larger voltage?
Silver
does. And so silver is going to be the thing that ends up getting reduced. Copper too, if it's present, won't do anything, but that means if you have copper metal, it's going to prefer to get oxidized instead. This is the same silver-copper example that I've used probably since the beginning that we've been talking about, electrochem. I'll write that question down with the voltages so that you can study this example. Because there's yet one more little trick we got to do here. So the question I asked is this. A totally bogus question would have been, which is the better reducing agent? Because they're already oxidized. And in order for something to be a reducing agent, it has to give electrons to something else. In fact, I'm going to write that part down because that's important. And I'll entitle this, oh, that's a little thin. Let's do this. I'll say, side note, that these would be poor reducing agents. Since to be a reducing agent, means the agent itself gets oxidized. And silver and copper 2 plus are already at their normal maximum oxidation states. There is such a thing as silver 2 plus. It's rare to the point where when you memorize ions, you memorize silver as plus 1. but it exists as plus two. But that's why I say normally this kind of thing wouldn't be favorable. So then going back to the original question I asked is which one of these is the better oxidizing agent? So since oxidizing agents get reduced, this is the same question as which is better at being reduced? And then that's why we have to put the table of voltages up, which for silver, to gain an electron and become silver metal, that is plus 0.80 volts. Copper 2, gaining 2 electrons to become copper metal, is plus 0.34 volts. So both of those are favorable, but one is more favorable than other. And so if you tried to put these systems together, then silver is going to force copper metal to be oxidized into the ion. So since the reduction of potential of silver plus is greater than copper 2 plus, silver is the better oxidizing agent. And we sort of had this discussion before, but not quite in the way I've expressed it just now. But this is an important point that lets you figure out how would the cell work. This is indirectly related to which way will the electrons flow. Because electrons are going to flow whichever direction gives it the better reduction, the better oxidation. So in this case, it's better for silver to be reduced, better for copper metal to be oxidized. So what's the cell voltage? What will we do to determine the cell voltage? In any redox reaction, in any cell, there's an oxidation and a reduction. Right now, I'm showing two reductions, right? So I need to flip one of the reactions around. Since silver would force copper solid to oxidize, the following half reactions apply. Now, what else do I have to do? Multiply by 2. That gives me the correct number of electrons. What do I do with the voltage? Nothing. Nothing. Why? Because voltage is a potential per electron. And if you double the number of electrons, then you double the total potential. But if you divide that potential by the number of electrons, you had double potential, double the electrons, it gives you the same voltage again. So because voltage is a quantity based per electron, you can multiply it by 1,000. It doesn't change the voltage. It does change the balance of electrons if you're trying to balance the reaction out, but it doesn't change the cell voltage at all. Yes?
The voltage for copper, that's negative because, yeah.
So, and I was going to write that down as the note. The because you reverse the reaction, okay, this is fundamental, but I want to go through this really quickly. Suppose that I have a reaction that's going forward and it's exergonic. What does exergonic mean?
Release energy.
So what would delta G be in that case? Negative. Exergonic is defined as negative delta G. What if you cause the reaction to go in reverse? The delta G would be flipped and it'd be the same value because a delta G negative going from reactants to products, that's a certain gap in energy. Well, if it releases that much energy going forward, then it turns out it releases exactly the same amount of energy going in reverse because reactions are state functions. So if you reverse the delta G, then what if it's an electrochemical cell? What if you had silver, if you had copper that normally wants to get reduced, and that's a positive voltage? If you force it to get oxidized instead because silver is the better oxidizing agent, then what will happen to that voltage? It flips. Because if delta G flips, so does the voltage, because there's an equation that relates delta G and voltage. So for copper, because we went from reduction to oxidation, that's why the sign flipped. Since reversing a reaction flips the sign for delta G, it also causes a sign flip for voltage. So that's why copper is negative, but why silver is not plus 1.6. I need to write that note down as well. Since voltage is a potential per electron, changing the number of electrons does not change voltage. Therefore, when calculating cell voltage, if one half reaction must be multiplied by a stoichiometric factor when balancing, the equation, the half cell voltage is not multiplied by that factor. In all the examples I think that I've done so far, I've carefully avoided talking about voltage. We might have had cases where we were balancing the reaction, so we multiplied by a factor, but I think this is the first time I've been doing that and then looking at the voltages associated with it. So I'm not really doing anything new, except we just didn't come across this small but important fact. When you multiply stoichiometrically, it doesn't change voltage. Now, coming back to review a bit, unless anyone has any questions on this. Is everybody okay with how we determined which was going to be the reducing agent here between... I'll move it back up, but let me just make sure. Does anyone have any questions about how I chose copper versus silver? It would be plus 0.46 because we did flip the sign here because we reversed the reaction. So reversing the reaction, you have to reverse the voltage because you reverse the potential. But before we get to more questions this, I want to just go in order so I can move this back up. Any questions here about the silver versus copper? Which one ends up doing what? Yes, silver is the better reducing, or silver is more favorable to be reduced because it's got the larger voltage. If it helps you to think in terms of delta G, silver being reduced is more exergonic than copper.
So it has nothing to do with the electrons, right?
Like, the number of electrons? No, nothing. That's what the next page is. That's what everybody wants me to scoot up so they can write down. That when we multiplied in order to balance in terms of stoichiometry, it did not change the voltage. The only thing that changes the voltage is if you do the reaction in reverse, or the next thing I'm going to review, which is if you change concentrations. Now I'll scoot this up for everybody else. Go for it. Yes? Whatever way gets you the right answer that you understand is fine. As a student, I didn't like memorizing formulas because if I spaced out on an exam, then I was sunk. But if I kind of understood the problem, then I could come up with the formula. So yes, all I'm doing is saying effectively add this voltage, subtract the other one. But I want to do it based on the equations because I think that is, for more people, the safer way to do it. But if you do well with the formula, go for it. Questions? Then let's get to that change in concentration. We had the Nernst equation last time, which if you're going to be memorizing equations, which I guess equations you have to memorize at some point, there's this one. Which we use to get this one. And don't make the mistake I did it first. The top equation, it's Q that is the variable. And the short way of explaining this equation is that we come up with an energy at the standard state, but the standard state's only one set of concentrations. If we change concentrations, then we use Q to figure out our fudge factor, our adjustment factor. And the reason this works is because in the standard state, all concentrations and everything else is one. And so you have an equilibrium constant or a Q of one. Well, if you had any other concentration than one, that's what goes in this adjustment factor to give you the true delta G. And I think that's even the way that I annotated it last time. Delta G naught, that's... I won't worry about that here. That's the way that we read this. Instead of delta G degree, it's delta G naught, meaning zero. Delta G naught, that's the energy at the standard state. Delta G is the true energy that's available. And we did an example where we had a cell that was at non-standard conditions, came up with a voltage, but there's one type of cell that we didn't see yet called a concentration cell. And I like, again, the example that's given in the book here. Which is of copper and copper nitrate, where you have the same thing in both solutions, copper and copper nitrate. And yet still there's a reaction. And this is not the same thing, but it may be a way for you to think about this. Let me draw this out. So in this concentration cell, both the anode and the cathode are copper. In both solutions, we have copper to nitrate, But in one of the solutions, the copper nitrate is only 0.1 molar. In the other solution, it's 1.0 molar. Let's say that we connect this with a salt bridge. And let's say that we connect it with our standard voltmeter. What's going to happen? And let's not look at voltages. Let's think of this in equilibrium terms. Let me throw something what seems totally unrelated out here. Think about osmotic pressure. Yeah, what does osmotic pressure have anything to do with anything? It's the fact that if you have two systems that are at different concentration, water moves so that you can balance out the concentrations in the two halves. Yes? The copper isn't, but some reaction's going to occur to, yes, increase the concentration in copper in the left-hand beaker, decrease the concentration of copper in the right-hand beaker. What would cause the concentration of copper to decrease in that right-hand beaker? But let's say that water doesn't move in this case, because the only reason I'm bringing up osmosis is not to talk about water moving, but that there's this drive to come to equal concentration. So someone was just giving me the right answer here. Josh, was it you? So let's not worry about the ions for the moment, because this is a redox reaction, so electrons are going to be the thing flowing. But, yes. Copper is reduced on the right side and is oxidized on the left-hand side. Correct. Why? Because if there's going to be some driving force to balance out the concentrations, and remember, in the salt bridge, it's the non-reactive ions that are able to move. So yes, maybe nitrate could move around, but the point is this reaction wants to happen to get equal concentrations of copper, and copper would not be allowed to move through the salt bridge. So the only thing available to happen is that if we had copper oxidize on the right-hand side here. I'm sorry, I said that backwards. Copper gets reduced on the right-hand side here, because that would pull copper out of solution. Well, on the left-hand side, then, we have the oxidation. Copper producing copper 2 plus, plus 2 electrons. Electron flow then would be to the right. The left-hand side would be just like all the other cells we've been constructing, where I tend to put the cathode on the right-hand side. No, wait. Oxidation at the anode. So yes, reduction at the cathode. Set it right. Oxidation over here. And how could we come up with a cell voltage? Because what is the standard cell voltage for this cell? Zero. Why? In a concentration cell, the standard voltage is always zero. Since the oxidation and reduction half reactions, are identical and opposite. because we just looked at the cell that I drew and talk about what's happening at the anode. That's copper producing copper ions and two electrons with a voltage of negative 0.34 volts. That's the number that we had in the previous example up above. Then if we look at the cathode, we've got Gesundheit. Copper reacting with the electrons to make copper solid, which is going to be positive 0.34 volts, which gives us zero. But you wouldn't have a concentration cell where everything's in the standard conditions, because the whole point of a concentration cell is you've got two different concentrations. And I almost hesitate to bring up osmosis again, because the only reason I brought that word up is because that might make some intuitive sense to people, where osmosis is a process where you're balancing concentrations. This also is a process of balancing concentrations, but it only happens through the electrons. And we have a formula for that, that the true cell concentration is going to be equal to the standard cell concentration minus a factor, which your instructor needs to memorize this equation too, it looks like. RT over NF, natural log of Q. Yes, okay, good. So yes, the standard cell voltage is going to be zero. I don't care about the true number here. I care about this as an example, so I'll just leave RT over NF. But what are we going to put in for Q? What does Q equal in this reaction? No. No. Ten. Actually, it's going to be... let's see. Copper 2 plus over copper 2 plus. Right? Because the product is copper 2 plus... The reactant is copper 2 plus, but which one? Because look at the original solutions. We have, to use the book's terminology to match the way they put the answer, we have the dilute solution on the left, and we have the concentrated solution on the right. It is that concentrated solution that acts as the reactant, isn't it? Because those ions are the ones that are getting the electrons. So it's going to be the concentrated concentration that's on the bottom. The dilute concentration is going to be on the top. Let me help annotate this. That the concentrated solution provides copper 2 plus as the reactant. And we have copper 2 plus forms as a product in the dilute solution. So remember that equilibrium constants are products over reactants. And so if the solution where copper is being produced is the dilute solution, so we put the dilute concentration there. And since the solution that has the concentrated solution of copper, that's the reactant, that's why we put that particular reactant there. Since the dilute concentration is 0.1 and the concentrated concentration is 1, Q is going to be equal to 0.1. Log... or natural log of anything less than 1 is a negative number. If you take a negative of a negative number, this thing's going to be greater than 0, which means it's a spontaneous cell, which means it works exactly the way that I drew it out. How many of you read about concentration cells or the rest of the chapter over the weekend like you had been warned to? So just remember that I'm that kind of unreasonable instructor that at least warns you what I'm going to talk about first. I'm not the unreasonable instructor that just puts things on a test that I hadn't even talked about, right? So if you didn't read it over the weekend, this is a little bit of a surprise. I can't say I didn't tell you, right? So if you're worried right now, then that's normal. But let me pull this all back down again. And we can go through this all one more time again if you all are as confused as you look. Yes.
At the bottom, so like, which one is the product, which one is reactant? Because we wrote on the side it's a product. And then...
Well, let's work our way through it again.
Okay.
Here are the two solutions, 0.1 molar and 1 molar. If the principle of a concentration cell is that they're going to get to the same concentration, then which side does the concentration have to go up and which side does the concentration have to go down? What's the solution that's dilute that the concentration has to go up? It's the solution that's concentrated that the concentration has to go down, right? So that means that the dilute solution is where it's getting made, and then the concentrated solution, it's where it's reacting. So if I want to put one more label on here, the reactant ions are on the same side where reduction's occurring. The product ions are the same side where oxidation is occurring. So the electron flow is going to go the way that I've written here because you're going to pull electrons out of the copper metal on the left-hand side. That's going to add copper ions in solution, bring this number up exactly the way that I'm saying that we need to. As those electrons flow to the right-hand side, they react with copper ions, so they're getting pulled out of solution, and that drops the concentration. If we come down to the Nernst expression, we need Q. Q is products over reactants. The products are the left-hand solution where they're getting made, and then the reactants are the right-hand solution where you start out in the greater concentration. Of course, as soon as this thing starts, the concentrations are going to change, but that's why cell voltage depends on what value you have right at that moment. So right when we start this up, if we have 0.1 for a dilute solution and 1 for our concentrated solution, it's going to give us a number automatically for voltage that's greater than 0, because if Q is less than 1, voltage is always positive. Which, if we reason through our concentration cell correctly, this is always the result. There's one way that's wrong if you make the concentrations go away from each other. The way that's going to happen is that the concentrations try to come to the same value. Rather than wasting the time to redraw the same picture because you've got better pictures in your textbook, then you can look here to see... This is exactly what I'm talking about. 0.1 molar solution on the left, 1 molar solution on the right, but after the reaction comes to zero voltage, then we end up with equal concentration in both solutions. This is why we're not having batteries on the exam, because I figured this might break a brain cell or two, this little topic right here. The entire exam is not going to be on concentration cells, by the way, but it is on the exam. Let me, because I see that we're starting to run low on time, let me flip through and see if there's anything else. So we don't worry about, the question was asked, how do we calculate the final concentrations? We don't care. All we want to know is what the voltage is when you mix everything together. The final concentration will be the average of the two solutions. If you have the same amount. Don't worry about that question, in other words. There is one more topic which this will be for the final, not for the exam. So in other words, everything I've now presented is the material for this exam. We started talking last week about electrolytic cells. What is an electrolytic cell? So I've actually, let me come back up to the very top here. So we have our list of topics that I'm going to add here for a cell voltage along with Nernst equation. I'll put concentration cell. There's one more thing that I'll put on here, which is electrolysis, only as much as we talked about up through last week, or the same question which I'm asking now, which is what is an electrolytic cell? And the answer is one that you have to apply voltage to in order to get the cell to work. The reason that we tend to exploit electrolytic cells is it lets you do what's called electroplating. So imagine that you have some kind of solution. And you have, because I can't think of anything creative right now, let's say that you have some kind of object. And to keep this more familiar, keep this more with what you're familiar with, let's say that we've got some other half cell here. We'll start that way. Where, as we normally do, I'm going to put the anode on the right. I'm going to just end up totally confusing everybody because there's not the time to do this properly. No, the test is not postponed. No, I'm realizing that I'm not, even if I was giving the best lecture ever, 2 minutes I'm not going to get where we need to on this. So, there's always the final. All right, so you've got your list of topics. Are there any last questions before we wrap up for the day then? Yes, wait, we got a question here. Where Q is great, I did draw a graph like that, where if Q is big, then this voltage is small. It actually just comes from that Nernst equation right there. So you do need to know the relationship between Q and K, and yes, I'll be posting those sets of notes from Wednesday where we did that before.